good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever or wherever you are, whether you're on your way to see friends, washing the dishes, or completing your daily Wordle, thank you for tuning in to Series 4 of How to Buy a Kitchen or Bathroom. My name is Georgina Townsend, and I am your host and the acting editor of Kitchens, Bedrooms, and Bathrooms magazine. For our 7th episode, I was joined a third time this series in our office slash studio by interior designers Beth Dadswell of Imperfect Interiors and Ros Wilson from Rosalind Wilson Design to tackle some of our readers' red-hot, pun fully intended, questions on kitchen appliances. For instance, the pros and cons of freestanding and built-in models, a favourite topic in the KBB Towers, gas versus induction hobs, and the importance of extraction. Plus, Beth and Ros reveal the tech they are trying to avoid in their projects. You wouldn't believe what these include. We also discuss the fact that buying appliances at the moment isn't as simple as it used to be, with lots of delays affecting the industry. So Ros and Beth give their top tips to help in these turbulent times. But before we get going, I have a favour to ask. We want to try and help as many people as possible, whether they're currently renovating a complete door-wrapper or just simply want to refresh their tired kitchen. So please, if you have the time, share the episode with friends or family or your neighbours down the street, plus leave a review and subscribe. We'd also love it if you could share with us your thoughts on the episode. Do you agree, don't you? Tag us on social media and let's keep the conversation going. Let's begin, shall we? Hello again, Beth and Ros. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
Beth, can you give us a quick hello?
Hello.
And Ros?
Hello.
There we go. That's very good. Thank you very much. So today we're talking all things kitchen appliances and the frequently asked questions we get at the magazine. So let's get straight into it, shall we? So freestanding versus inbuilt appliances, the pros and cons of each. Beth, are you team built-in or are you team
freestanding? I think it, as usual, it generally depends on the sort of the look of the kitchen, the feel, the space, the architecture of the room. I quite like the look of, for example, I've got an Everhot oven in my kitchen, which feels quite industrial, but then the building was an industrial building, so it feels like it sits quite naturally in there. I think generally speaking, freestanding pieces draw your eye more than integrated. If you've got a small space and you're sort of trying to fit lots of things in, I think integrated's generally better, especially with things like fridges and fridge freezers. You know, often people think they need a big American fridge freezer and actually it sort of dominates the space. And I think unless you've got a huge kitchen and it's a really amazing fridge freezer, it's better to sort of hide the appliances, maybe pick one or two things that are really amazing, like the hob or boiling water tap, and have those as the features rather than thinking that you have to expose everything.
So I know we don't like putting labels on things, but freestanding appliances, do they fit with a particular style of kitchen better?
Well, going back to the cliches, in your classic country kitchen, you'd have an Arga, wouldn't you? Which, again, I think you can turn that on its head. You can put an Arga in a very contemporary space or an industrial kind of space, and that actually really works well. So it's just working out the look. There aren't any hard and fast rules. It's about getting the balance right, again, which is not probably what you want me to say, but it's quite nuanced, isn't it?
I agree. I don't think there's a formula here. We did a very modern kitchen, which actually, because it was such a voluminous room, it used to be, it's an old converted house, so the kitchen was inherited in the reception room, so very big proportions, beautiful period features. The kitchen itself was contemporary, but we created a sort of a lower freestanding piece for the sink run and one or two appliances, which felt really nice because we built in marble a kind of an upstand with a shelf which had some detail, and that felt freestanding. We did it because we wanted to have that juxtaposition of modern and contemporary yet freestanding. So I agree. I think it's about getting the look right. I think it's understanding what the brief is, what the space is, what you want out of the space, and then bringing those pieces together. No hard and fast rules, in other words.
So I suppose if you've got a more contemporary look, however, you are potentially not going to be wanting the Arga and the big, massive range cookers or the big American fridge freezers. Would the integrated appliance be better for a more contemporary look?
Would it though, controversially? Because I think the big American fridge freezer just appears everywhere. You know, we did a project in Suffolk, so the house is dating, you know, to the 1600s, and honestly, the beams are above my head, and you've seen how short I am, so that would be crazy. Absolutely. In fact, you couldn't even fit a big double door American-style fridge in that space, so no, that wouldn't work so well there, and then it makes sense to have a different situation. In fact, as it so happened, we had a fridge freezer in a different kind of pantry area, which was the only place we could get some height for something normal to fit in. So I guess in that regard, there's functionality and a feasibility that will just not allow certain things to be brought together. But it's just such an interesting topic, because whatever you throw at us in terms of a combination, no, that would work.
You can make it work, can't you? Yeah.
And a fitted appliance, I literally think it could just work in any space. Like I said, that one conceptual project we did where the oven was almost floating in like a box that we created, that's almost like a freestanding oven. It's even floating off the wall, so it projects on the wall floating. So there's a way to create a working solution to both sides of this discussion. I think it's because it's an appliance. It's not a discussion on style or door styles or so forth. It's an actual appliance, and it needs to know how to work in whatever space.
So let's talk more about practicalities then. So it can work in any style, inbuilt, freestanding appliances. But what about actual practicality? I was talking to a homeowner recently who, she had to do a stint in the bungalow that she was basically about to knock down and build a new build on top of. And so she had to use the kitchen for a while. And in that kitchen was just eye level ovens. And she thought she was team range cooker all the way. She thought she would have one for the rest of her life. She loved the look, she loved the feel, but then she realized she didn't have to bend down anymore. A lot of these traditional range cookers, they don't even have glass doors, do they? I don't understand how people use range cookers that don't have glass doors. I think that's a particular skill of patience to not keep opening the door to look at it. She was converted, you know, in her new kitchen, had eye-level inbuilt appliances. So in terms of practicality, is there a difference between freestanding and inbuilt appliances?
Again, if you break down any appliance, like if we had a list here of any appliance, we're speaking about ovens, so let's go start with that. Like you say, you can build these in at a particular height to suit you, to suit whatever your height is, which we've just done for a client. And the door can open in whichever way you want it to help you. You know, working at a lower level, I haven't seen many kitchens, and we don't design many kitchens anymore that have the low level under counter ovens, because I agree that is a functionality lower back issue when you have to open up, bend down to get something out of the oven. But any appliance can be made to work. A fridge freestanding, well, there are many of those still, and it could be a feature, and then built in, it's fine. So it's both ways. Obviously, in terms of hobs, even hobs can be freestanding and a piece of furniture. Any single variation of this discussion works. It really, really does. It's about how you're building it into the rest of the kitchen and how that's going to work for you. I mean,
and what's practical for you?
What's practical for you?
You know, what's practical for you might not be practical for somebody else. So again, it's all about looking at how you're going to use the kitchen, what's going to be useful and make your life easier, and designing around that.
Is budget ever a factor, do you think, between freestanding and built-in appliances? Because there's such a variety in appliances and brands, really it doesn't matter.
I think that's a good question, because I think that technology is going so far and the requirements or the specification from appliances is so great now, and they can be pricey. They can absolutely be pricey. So, but how it impacts in terms of freestanding and built, these are appliances you buy anyway. I'm thinking more along the lines of this, the modern world, as in if you look at Miele, for example, and how far the advanced technology is going in, or any brand of kitchen appliances. But then you look at Sub-Zero and Gaggenau, for example, which are your classic cars of kitchen appliances. And they do functionality so well. They really think about the user experience, but not the specification sheet. Like, I'm not going to have my appliance talking back to you. It's not going to tell you the temperature outside. It's not going to book your holiday. It's not going to bring your washing to you. It's not going to do any of that. But what it has to do in terms of cooking, it's going to do really well. But then you get, say, your Miele and all these, the other ones, and there, your specification sheet is huge. Like, you can obviously automate at home. You can set the temperature from home. It can open up. All these things it can do. So it's more about that kind of conversation, because I would go so far as to say Sub-Zeros and Gaggenau's kind of suit a more traditional style kitchen, and I can see them being built into freestanding pieces because they are more retro in their design. But again, I think it's personal choice. I think it's, what do you like? Are you more of a country style shake a door, that person that's going to want that
a big old range that kind of keeps you warm in the winter rather than something you just switch on with a phone.
Because I'm not seeing your kitchen with some radical black speaking, all-encompassing bells and whistles situation.
No way.
A robot in the corner. You do know what I mean?
I think some of this discussion is around the visuals as well. You know, you were asking about practicality. But I think, again, this is a personal thing. I'm not a fan of kitchens where you have all the ovens sort of on the wall and they're like a big shiny black and chrome bank of ovens. Quite often kitchen designers try and encourage you to have four, you know, to make it look symmetrical. And it starts getting insanely expensive. Probably won't use two of them. You know, you might use two ovens on Christmas Day. But, you know, you have to just be a little bit careful about adding layers and layers of tech in because it can quite quickly overtake the aesthetics, really. And then you end up designing the kitchen around the appliances.
It feels as rule of thumb. It could be that the more classic are freestanding, the more contemporary are built in. But there's always a bridge between the two. Just feels like that's the way it is.
Okay, great. So the next question is a hot favorite here at the KBB Towers. Roz, are you gas or are you induction hob?
Oh my God, it's such an interesting question. I am probably going to go with, I'm going to surprise myself, gas. I'm going to go with gas.
Well, I've got an EverHot, which has an induction hob on one side and a hot plate on the other side. So I can do both.
Ross, she's doing it again. She's not giving us a one-word answer.
She's not, because it's controversial that I even said gas. And I was hoping that, Beth, you'd be like standing the ground, because it is a it's not an easy answer, this one.
I like the induction, I have to say, because it's so quick.
It's very quick.
Put it on full blast for a minute and you've got boiling water. So if you want to do something really quickly, it's good. If you want to cook more slowly, I think gas is probably better.
So Beth, what are we saying? You've not answered me.
Both. I want to keep my options open.
You cannot have both. It's either gas or it's either induction.
If I had to choose, I would say induction because I just like the speed. I'm not very patient with cooking, as my other half would tell you. I get bored really quickly. So I literally like to be able to switch a button on. Yeah. It's very hot very quickly. I can do what I need to do and do something else because I don't love cooking.
Okay, great. Yeah. So we've got a debate here. I like it. So yeah. Ross, why did you go for gas? Why did you surprise yourself?
I did surprise myself because I've lived with induction previously and it was very easy. Off you go. It warms up. But again, I think that's perhaps this is just a bit more of traveling through doing lots of kitchens and perhaps as you get older. I've always enjoyed, I'm not brilliant at cooking, by the way, but I enjoy it because I just like trying things. And I think that feels like more a gas situation to me. I don't feel like I'm getting all creative and trying things on the induction situation. I agree. It's more about modern life. It's like, yeah, I need to cook this meal. I'm putting this together. It's just like that. It suits that way of life, induction. But gas feels like a book versus a Kindle. That's got to be my personal preference. And if you'd asked me that very question a year ago, I know I would have said induction. I know it. But now I'm not. I'm saying gas.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because obviously gas hobs, especially the really fancy ones, the ones that maybe are sunk down into the worktops, that they do feel dramatic and a statement. And when you're cooking, you can really feel the experience of cooking. Mm. But for me, I'm team induction all the way because flames scare me.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone should trust me with fire.
There's a story you need to tell us, obviously.
No, it's just I'm very clumsy and you know, I've got a little girl and in terms of safety as well, I just think, you know, for me, the pans are precariously just placed upon these metal frameworks. If you just knock it or, you know, it fills me with horror. And also I'm messy. I'm such a messy cook.
They're quite hard to clean, aren't they?
So hard to clean.
Mm. With an induction hob,
which induction is not.
Two wipes, and it's you're done.
Get that.
Although if you don't have it completely flush, there is the disgusting tiny little sort of rim that you've got to get, like, you know, a toothpick or something to like clean all the gunge out with. That's always fun. But equally, that's, you know, that's a once a month type
kind of thing
scenario. It is really just a wipe and that's it.
But well, I mean, in terms of having an induction hob versus a range cooker or gas cooker on an island, then that's questions safety as well, isn't it? Because often people have got bar stools at the island. You know, the idea of the kids sitting there doing their homework and you you're cooking and chatting to them, if they can just lean over and put their hand in a flame, you know, that might be a consideration when you're choosing which one to go for.
Feels like induction is the fastest, safer way to go. I would tend to agree from a family point of view and just cooking. And so it's probably the better way to go now and more efficient.
But if a client came to you and said, I am such a keen cook, I love cooking all different types of cuisine, what would you recommend?
So mostly gas, but a combination. Because with that question and answer usually comes a bit more of an expanded version of they really do know their way around cooking utensils and food and how they like things prepared. And inevitably what's happened with us is it's been a combination between the two. But it's the whole design of the kitchen with the extraction. It's a different brief. But I've never done a really good person who cooks a lot and it's just one or the other.
I would encourage them to go to some showrooms because lots of them now, you know, the appliances. Yeah, they do demonstrations. You can go and try them. They'll cook for you on them, show you how they work. Enjoy that experience. Enjoy the experience of choosing your appliances because they're not cheap. You want to make sure you get the right one. And you also want to know the best way of using them because, for example, cooking on something like an Arga, the total opposite of cooking with an induction. So, you know, you need to have some understanding of how the two are different, what kind of results you're going to get with your cooking if you're really into cooking, and just do your research.
Something that's really popular at the moment as well is the downdraft hobs. I'm seeing that a lot because a lot of the sociable cooking, you don't like sight lines being ruined. Are they something that you're seeing a lot more recently?
Yeah, I've had clients that have, Bora seem to be the very popular ones that are, I think, one of the most efficient. And I'm really happy about that. I'm not really into tech in the kitchen, but I think anything that means that you don't have to have a big clumsy extractor fan over an island is got to be a good thing. They're very discreet. All my clients that have had them have raved about them. I haven't personally used one, but they've all been very happy.
Extraction is a big identifying item on our brief list because it comes up in every project as something that's really important in terms of effectiveness, sound, brief specification. Now, on one side, it ties into building regs, and so we have to comply with that. And so that's one aspect of it. But the second is just how it works. Now, we don't like to see extractors anymore. The rules have changed with regards to the height and the circulation of the air. And of course, it depends on the size and density of your room, right? I don't like downdraft extractors at all. We haven't installed one probably for a number of years. It's just good for anybody to know that extraction is an important factor to consider. Recirculating, while you're wasting your time, you need a vent ventilation space, you need to be able to vent out. Otherwise, what's the effectiveness at all? So if you're lucky enough to have a refurbishment project where you're starting from scratch and you can identify an external ventilation route, then that's exactly the way that you need to go. And then you need to consider the specification of your extractor for the sound, because sound is not a great thing when you're in your kitchen and then you've got this low humming noise that is continuous and the effectiveness of it. But you can actually put your extractors quite high now, so that you can, if you've again got the void space, you can make them flush with your ceiling. But we continuously try to find ways around this because myself and the team, we just don't like the downdraft extractors at all. So many things to extraction.
I love this. Controversial.
But I say we've had a lot of luck with Western. For the last few years, we've been installing Western all over the place. And remember, your efficiency of your extractor is equally as good as your team on your contractor installing it. Because if you don't have a contractor and knows their thing around extraction, you'll end up with the wrong ventilation size. And
also how far it is from the source, you know, how far the extractor is from your wall where it's extracting to. If it's miles away and you're going around bends and you're doing funny things with the extractor, you know, it becomes less efficient. So in an ideal world, you want to be close to the point where it actually extracts. If you look at trends in America, big wide extractor hoods are very much a thing, and I think that's coming here as well. We see that more and more with, again, shaker style kitchens. You know, it could be quite a big industrial type of hood, which can look really amazing, or it could be hidden in a cabinet, or it could have some, if you want to go really traditional, you have some trim on there. You don't have to hide the extractor, but you don't want to see the silver chrome extractor unless it's a really special piece, you know.
Or you make it something special.
Yes,
as a feature.
Exactly. Yeah. We're doing a kitchen at the moment where it's being wrapped in bronze, which will make it a feature, but you're not seeing the actual extractor, you're seeing the casing, which is quite nice because there's other bits of bronze in the room. So yeah, I think, you know, again, as always, it comes back to the look that you're trying to achieve, but you do need to consider the practicalities and plan that in right at the beginning, because that really needs to be done early on, especially if it's an extractor that's on an island that needs to extract under the floor. You know, that's all got to be planned in super early.
Jumping back to a couple of episodes ago, we spoke about the lighting and getting that on board quickly. I think there are a couple of things that we will lump sum under the mechanical and electrical specification, which is all your electrics and these services as well. Just give them time, because it's not always aesthetics. It's not always the finishes and so forth. You have to get this stuff right first. So to make a little wish list of what your requirements are and plug that against what would be the electrical works, what would be the plumbing works, what would be the things that can help you get to, and you need to ask, you're going to need to ask your contractor this as well, because you might not know any of this, but at least you've got a list to start from and you can get around that.
Yeah.
Because retrofitting and paying later is just a...
it's a big no-no, isn't it? The same with boiling water taps or some filters, or if you want a big American fridge freezer with an ice machine on the front, you know, you've got to think about the plumbing and the electrics and all the boring stuff that you don't see in a in a lovely photo. All got to be planned in right at the beginning.
So I love how this conversation started with gas versus induction hobs, by the way, guys.
And we went on to extraction.
But no, I think extraction is definitely important when we are talking about any type of hob, and the fact that you should get the right size, the right height, looking at the sound. I definitely think that's all really important when you're looking at whatever style hob you're getting. You need to look at extraction at the same time.
Yes, I think it's all a holistic.
Definitely. The two go hand in hand.
Yeah.
If you go to kitchen manufacturers or kitchen high street stores and ask the question, get the answers back from wherever you're asking. Do a bit of research online as well to find out what information you need to be looking for or what questions you need to be asking, because extraction has some technical to go behind the scenes, which you might not know about.
So our next question, which we are frequently asked, is how do I choose between a fridge, a freezer and a fridge freezer?
Usually comes down to the client, and are they someone who freezes lots of food and just bungs it in the oven, or do they like to cook from fresh? It's very much a personal choice. If you have a huge kitchen, you can have whatever you like, but you might be constrained in a smaller kitchen. You might think, I want 80% fridge and 20% freezer because I don't really cook frozen food. It's personal choice. There's no right or wrong. It's how you're going to use it.
Our office, the word meal prep comes up quite a lot with the team. Sunday night or weekend meal preps for the week ahead, because we try to be quite healthy as an office. So we just sort of speaking about what we eat during the week, what we bring for our lunches and what's up with dinners and so forth. So I think freezers play into it. And I think a lot of people do integrate a more healthier lifestyle these days, and preparing meals, whether it be for healthy food eating or just actually for your family for the week, if you don't have time, I think it plays into that equation as well about having a freezer, and then how much of a freezer, 60, 40, 70, 30, or just the whole other side of the fridge is a freezer. We have clients that have several fridges and several freezers in this room and that room and all around the house. It does depend on the brief. It depends on the lifestyle. It depends on what your requirements are. I think I've not yet had a client that hasn't had a freezer, but I just know that in some cases it's either I don't need much or I need loads. There's no middle ground with this freezing situation.
Does budget ever come into it?
Yeah,
because for fridges,
fridge freezers can be super expensive. Well, fridges or freezers or fridge freezers.
Or the combination
it's the look, the brand. There's a huge disparity in price. Again, I would normally encourage people to do integrated, because then it doesn't really matter what it looks like. You can have a cheaper one, hide it behind doors. Yeah. No one knows it's a cheaper fridge. Whereas some people might want the huge status fridge freezer. They want everyone to see it. You have to have special cabinets fitted around it.
It's a tricky one, because some people have just had that much more experience or traveled down the road of having a number of houses, a number of fridges, that they just know what they want. And they know that the internal capacity of my fridge, I want drawers, vegetable trays that are this deep, and I want... And it's quite surprising when they say that, because you go, wow, you spent a lot of time analysing your fridge.
People do get really analytical, don't they? Yeah.
It's like, you can't fit the bottle this way and you can only do this, and I can't fit that, and I need the internal ice maker or the external, I need this and that. That takes up too much space. So there's a lot of information coming at you with just a fridge. Certain brands do it better than that others in terms of their internal space and their liter capacity and the drawers and things. But I'm always surprised at how much information clients know about their fridge and their freezer. But again, if you've got a family, you probably do know a lot more. If you've had a several houses down the line, you've had several fridges, you know what you want. And then you've just got to go look at that. But because if you integrate, sure, you can get a really good fridge freezer or fridge and separate freezer that you don't need to have a fancy brand name. Of course, then we know that there are clients that say Sub-Zero, I'm just going to have that fridge because that's what I want. So there's a whole world of choices.
And what about the glass-fronted fridges that are popular in certain households in America, where the fridge is the size of a small car, and it's glass-fronted and it's styled.
Yeah, no, I can't.
With fresh fruit and vegetables and everything's lined up. I mean,
oh, for goodness sake.
Who's got time for that?
We have a client who's got time for that.
I've just insulted someone.
It's not a glass-fronted, but we have opened her fridge before and were astounded at just what is happening. Is it alphabetized? Is it color-coded?
Oh, wow.
I don't know what's happening in here.
Oh, my goodness.
But every cupboard in the house. Cannot mention names, cannot disclose any information, but astounding, to be fair. But we had a client that recently bought a fridge and the option was frosted glass front. And I was like,
who wants that? See?
Who wants the milk carton squashed up, its face up against the frosted glass?
Dead lettuce.
Have you ever actually looked inside your fridge, like at the back on this bottom drawer? It's like...
horrible.
It's not nice. It's not pretty. I don't want to see that. I mean, I'm all for a large wine cabinet that's got all of like, you know, beautiful carver that's lined beautifully. Mm. But your actual fridge. Okay. So that's fridge freezers. So we're talking a lot about lifestyle, families, how do you cook? But a lot of appliances are good for entertaining. So if you love to entertaining, do you have a particular appliance that you would recommend to a homeowner? Let's say I love to throw parties, I love to do dinner parties. What is the must-have appliance for them?
So I don't think it's a must-have one. It's the oven situation when they like to cook. They definitely say, we entertain so much, I want the second oven. I want the steam oven and the second oven. Because inevitably, they're going to want to cook a fantastic meal and it's going to be not en masse 20 or 200 people, but it's going to be 8-10 people and you kind of need the second oven for that. So they're quite particular about having ovens for their entertaining purposes.
For me, I would say I've noticed a real move away from the food tech and more into wine rooms. I'm doing a whiskey room for someone at the moment. The drinking element, the wine cellars under the floor, that seems to be more of a feature people are asking for now than fancy equipment in the kitchen. So I don't know if that's a trend or if that's just something I'm noticing, but it's definitely something that we're having to plan into kitchens. It might be two wine fridges. I've got a client at the moment who wants one fridge under the island that's for soft drinks, and then they want another wine fridge somewhere else for wine. It's expanding on the drinking element. Maybe that's COVID related.
It's another post-pandemic thing for you, isn't it?
Post-pandemic thing, yeah.
Because there's things like boiling water taps.
I mean, I think that's just a must-have anytime. You have your kettle still if you want it, but instant hot water tap, definitely. For me, I think
I disagree.
Ideal.
Whoa.
I'm going to be really controversial and say I can't stand them.
<It's okay. laughs>
I can't work them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't like the tea. I don't like the taste of the tea. I've got an old fashioned, it's actually Japanese, but it sits on my induction hob and it boils like a kettle. It's very quick because it's on the induction. I can't get to grips with the boiling water tap.
Interesting, because most people I talk to say that a boiling water tap has revolutionized the way that they use the kitchen.
I don't know. Tech doesn't do it for me. It doesn't feel
like
warm and fuzzy to me.
I'm
a Luddite.
Yeah. Funny enough, with your induction answer, you think that it would be a good match with the instant hot water tap.
I know.
But it's not. But I guess I'm the gas person who likes the instant hot water tap and you're the other way around. But I agree that there's got to be a limit to things, although I don't think technology is just about to stop. I think it's not anywhere in that direction.
It's going skyrocketing.
But the instant hot water tap, I mean, I agree with you on the taste of tea and things. When you have tea from an instant hot water tap, it doesn't taste anything near the kettle water. And tea for me is really important, right?
Yeah, me too.
And so I give you that and I would definitely have my kettle still. But I like the idea of I'm going to get a step ahead on my slow gas cooker with the instant hot water tap. I'm going to go in there with some hot water. I just think in some cases there's merit for the instant hot water that you just require for filling up a bowl of something that I'm going to wash off something, I'm going to do this. But yeah, I think I'm just in favor of it. I think personally, we do install them in, I think, every single kitchen.
Oh, all of my clients want them.
It's one of those things now.
I think the other issue I have with them is they're not pretty, most of them, are they? They're quite chunky and I quite like
them. You can get the more traditional ones though. And we've just done one on a project we're finishing, which we have had it finished in different finishes.
Yes,
antique brass.
That helps.
Which does help.
Yes.
Because
it becomes less of a, there's the boiling water tap. It's completely different finish, style, look, feel to everything else in the kitchen, but we need to have one.
And that's what was the problem with it. It was a bit like what I do with the
clunky.
Style, and then you're all under the hot water and it's just ugly and there's blue and red lights flashing. And it's like, what's going on with my tap?
Or in my case, it just did, I could never get it to work. Just can't work them out.
I feel like that was probably a mental block.
I think it
you
was
You weren't
too.
Willing
I
to
wasn't
learn
embracing
how to
make it,
was
I?
What we do have is, which comes up in quite a few briefs of late, and what clients have put on the table is, where you have a sideboard, and if you're going to design and make it bespoke, you can effectively make a heating pad or design or insert a heating pad under the stone that you have, which makes that sideboard a heating element as well. So when you're serving food from the kitchen, you can make that surface warm and then your platters stay on there, which is quite nice if you're designing a piece from scratch, which is quite
very chic, isn't it?
It is.
It's but in a way, almost a bit retro. Sounds like a...
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
You could remember hot trays, hot plates.
Yes.
That's,
yeah.
It's the built-in hot plate of the 80s.
I'm sure yours are much more stylish than that.
And good. So it's come up on a few briefs, which is quite fun. And I think it's very clever. Again, you have to obviously know that there's going to be the outlay of having something built, like a piece of furniture built. But, you know, if you're going to buy a sideboard, you're going to buy a sideboard. So you could have this done with your electrician. Maybe get that excess piece of stone that you have left over from your bathroom or something like that, or your kitchen island, and you can build this here, which would be quite good. Wine fridges, yes, you spoke about the wine and all of those. I think wine, whiskey, whatever it is always going to be relevant in dining and entertaining. And you need your ovens, you've got your alcohol on board, you've got your warming platters, you've got, do you need a coffee machine to be built in or not? Again, that depends on if it's plumbed in or not plumbed in. A lot of people these days, or our clients or people we speak to, like to just go for a freestanding coffee machine for after dinner coffee, because they find that the maintenance on a plumbed in coffee machine is just a bit of a hassle and they don't want that. Sometimes they just prefer being able to use a nice coffee machine with the pods, which is equally good enough.
And people like a tea and coffee station, don't they? They like a sort of a pantry that might be freestanding. Inside, you've got your kettle or not. You've got your coffee machine. You've got all your...
It's quite nice
and
to
that's
have that.
That's
it's
entertaining. You know, people come around for coffee. It's not always for dinner, is it? It might just be a cup of coffee and then you've got everything there. And I think people do spend money on coffee machines, actually.
I think they're more than happy to.
Yeah.
Do you two have any buying tips when looking for appliances, especially in these current times where prices are rising, there's a lot of delays on certain appliances? So for anyone who's doing their kitchen right now, they're looking at what appliance to buy. Is there any advice you can give them?
Yes, start looking really early. I mean, the delays on appliances at the moment are insane. If you want anything fancy, I mean, you're looking at months and months. So again, don't leave it until you've ordered the kitchen. Start looking really early. I think if you've got space to have things delivered early and you've got somewhere to put them, just buy them. Put them in the house. Check that they're not damaged. Otherwise, you know, so many projects of mine are delayed at the moment because the appliances are just not available. So yeah, that's my big tip. Look out for sales. Try and snap things up when they're in the sale. Just try and be a bit savvy. You can actually generally find quite a disparity of prices if you hunt around. Depending on your budget, you could also think about maybe buying something that's been refurbished, or possibly it's come out of a show kitchen or something. There are ways of saving money, but you will need time to do your research, get online. It's much easier and quicker to just get a kitchen company to supply it, but you can make savings if you've got time.
You have to do your research. I don't think anybody should go into a refurbishment or a kitchen refurbishment without that critical research stage, which we've identified in previous episodes, of the electrics and the lighting and the plumbing and the ventilation. And now this is also something to ask. What are lead times? What are the cost differences? In addition to lead times, you can know that the new models come out in certain months of the year. So you can get a very high spec, almost identical model, January 23rd and or February, whatever, at a reduced price because the new model's coming out or it's just come out.
Yeah.
So I know that happens with television and I know that happens with the Miele appliances as well. So it's worth just asking questions because it's just sensible and it can make you some savings as well. More than that, I would say that research phase should entail that you find out what the specs are of the things that you are buying so that you can identify and educate your electrician, your plumber, your contractor down the line, because are you getting, for example, if it's a steam oven, obviously you need a water feed, or if you're going to get your condensed dryer and so forth, in terms of your white appliances, your washing machine and your tumble dryer, you need to ask questions, read up and research so that you're buying the right thing as well. Know how you live in terms of, if I'm still on white goods, your washing capacity and what requirements and what you want out of the white goods that you buy, but also what you want out of your ovens and any of the appliances, because you'd be naive to think it's okay that you can just, oh, this looks pretty and it's going to fit in the space that I want. So yeah, it's so good, because there's so many other things now. Like we've spoken about, the technology is advancing so much, you might want certain features, and it doesn't necessarily mean that a big expensive brand will give you what you want. Other brands are equally as good.
Thank you so much, you two, for talking all things kitchens appliances with me. I've certainly picked up loads of tips and advice, and I hope our listeners have too. You will be joining me for one more episode of this season. So I look forward to talking to you then.
Thank you, Georgina.
Good to be here. Look forward to the next one.
Thank you once again to Roz and Beth, another absolute cracker. I love their honesty about what they like and don't like. They will be joining me again, answering some of our readers' kitchen dilemmas. And based on some of their former episodes, believe me, you don't want to miss this. Before I leave you, I wanted to please ask again, if you liked what you heard, to please give us a review, subscribe, tag us on social media, and share with friends and family. Until next time.